And we are back. It's Rush Limbaugh, the cutting edge of societal evolution. That means if you're here each and every day, you know what's going to happen before it happens, and you will know why. It is great to have you as part of the largest audience in talk radio, in media, in America today. Telephone number, if you want to join us, is 800-282-2882. The email address is rushbo@eibnet.com. This Rasmussen poll today that says just 26% of the American people have confidence that lawmakers know what they're doing in the economic crisis. Why do you think that is? Now, there's a couple reasons. I mean, there's a general distrust of government that exists, which, frankly, I'm happy to see. A lot of us sit here in perpetual fear that at least half the country thinks government's the answer to every problem, will vote liberals and Democrats and so forth. But one of the problems here is the American people, and let's be down the line bullseye honest about this, shall we? The American people don't want the country to go to hell in a handbasket. The American people don't want the country to be in a tank. The American people don't think it's in the tank. As far as the American people are concerned, they're getting up and they're going to work. And those that have mortgages, most of them, 95-96%, are paying them. When they go to the store, there's food there. Except for the Southeast and Charlotte, North Carolina, there's gasoline. And the oil price is down to 98. Gasoline is not as expensive as it was. People are buying new cars. People are still getting on board airlines and flying to different parts of the country. Business is still being transacted. And people, what is this? Armageddon? Great Depression? My life really hasn't changed that much. The economy's got good fundamentals. We're doing okay here. So there's a giant disconnect. The only people who are trying to talk down your faith in your country is the Democrats, the liberals and their accomplices, the drive-by media. They've done their best for the last 6 years to make you miserable, to make you unhappy, to make you roiled with crisis, to make you angry. We hear all about Armageddon, and if we don't do this now, it's going to be horrible. Well, now was last week, and it's not horrible. No, we didn't do it. It's not horrible. It's not Armageddon. I realize there are more people unemployed this month than last. I'm not saying that there's no suffering or pain out there. There always is. But I'm just pointing out here, ladies and gentlemen, that the rhetoric coming from the Democrats for 5 years does not match reality. The rhetoric coming out of Washington the last week doesn't match the reality people are living. Now, we can only hope that a vast majority of the American people understand that it's the Democrat Party and the drive-by media that want this country's economy in the tank, and they're doing everything they can to put it there, as evidenced by yesterday's vote in the House. Led by Nancy Pelosi, they did not want this bailout to pass. They wanted it to fail, and they wanted a Republic. They wanted one of two things. They wanted it to pass with Republican votes making the margin of victory, because they know public opinion is dead set against it. They wanted the Republicans being blamed for it. Or, second, they didn't want it to pass so that the drive-bys would blame Republicans for that and create more chaos and crisis. Your Democrat Party, they're the only ones that currently see your country as a soup line country, and they want to make it as bad as they can purely for their own electoral opportunity coming up in 5 weeks. All right, let's go to the audio sound bites. I promised that we would continue parsing the Friday night debate between the Messiah and John McCain. Let's pick up here with Obama saying that we took our eye off the ball in Afghanistan.
We hadn't finished the job in Afghanistan. We hadn't caught bin Laden. We hadn't put Al-Qaeda to rest. And as a consequence, I thought that it was going to be a distraction. Now, Senator McCain and President Bush had a very different judgment. We took our eye off the ball.
We did not take our eye off the ball. We never left Afghanistan. We did not stop our theater of operations in Afghanistan. Obama on Friday night in this debate lied, I can't tell you how many times, talking about Afghanistan. And he said that Al-Qaeda's back stronger than ever. It's not. We ran them out of Iraq. Al-Qaeda is not stronger than ever. And McCain did not correct him on that, but McCain did respond to this notion we took our eye off the ball in Afghanistan.
Senator Obama is the chairperson of a committee that oversights NATO that's in Afghanistan. To this day, he's never had a hearing.
What about that?
I mean, it's remarkable.
It's remarkable. And this, at this point, Obama was smirking a la Al Gore. You know, Al Gore in the 2000 debate with Bush would sigh when Bush said something Al Gore thought was stupid. Obama here was just shaking his head and had his head in his hand and wincing and so forth. Like, oh, this is stupid. This guy's an idiot. And he came back with this.
Look, I'm very proud of my vice presidential selection, Joe Biden, who's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And as he explains, and as John well knows, the issues of Afghanistan, the issues of Iraq, critical issues like that, don't go through my subcommittee because they're done as a committee as a whole. But that's Senate inside baseball.
They do go through your subcommittee. Lied about that. And then he said, it doesn't matter. My vice president understands this. I don't need to do hearings. My vice president understands this. Your vice president's a joke. Stand up, Chuck. Stand up. Let them. In fact, wasn't Obama out in Nevada? We just played a soundbite telling people back in Washington, stand up. Step up. Stand up, Chuck. Let them see. Oh, my God. Oh, Lord, what did I do? Good. Love you. Hey, whiz. Well, here's Obama. He said this twice in the debate Friday night.
Nobody is talking about losing this war. What we're talking about is recognizing that the next president has to have a broader strategic vision about all the challenges that we face.
Now, McCain did not swat this one up. No, McCain cleaned up, by the way, in this section of the debate. Don't misunderstand. He wiped the floor with Obama during the foreign policy aspect of the debate, but this was a sitting duck. This was a hanging curveball. Nobody's talking about losing this war. Let's go back to the audio sound bites.
This war is lost. The surge is not accomplishing anything.
That was Dingy Harry, April 2007, September 7, 2007, Dick Turbin.
By carefully manipulating the statistics, the Bush-Petraeus report will try to persuade us that violence in Iraq is decreasing and the surge is working. Even if the figures are right, the conclusion's wrong.
Durbin accusing Bush and Petraeus of manipulating stats. Surge isn't working. We're losing. Obama said nobody's talking about losing this war. You guys owned defeat in this war. You sought defeat in this war, Obama. And so did your party. Here's Biden. This is September 9th, 2007. Meet the press. Tim Russert said, General Petraeus said in a letter to his troops that we have not had the political reconciliation we thought we would have at this time. It's been much slower. But there is some hope. And then he added this. My sense is that we have achieved tactical momentum, wrested the initiative from the enemy in a number of areas of Iraq. We are, in short, a long way from the goal line, but we do have the ball. We're driving down the field. Is that what you expect him to say tomorrow?
I think he's dead flat wrong. The fact of the matter is that there is that this idea of these security gains we made have had no impact on the underlying sectarian dynamic. None. None whatsoever.
Nobody is talking about losing, Obama. Harry Reid, this war is lost. Look, we all remember the Democrats talking up defeat, wanting to pull the troops out of there. And McCain let Obama get away with twice saying nobody's talking about losing. I'll tell you something else. He actually said we're losing three different times. The third time he said it a different way during that soundbite where Obama said, hey, I have a bracelet too. I have a bracelet too. And then he couldn't remember the name of the soldier on the bracelet. And McCain just before that said, the mother of the soldier who gave me this bracelet said, please don't let my son's death be in vain. Obama said that the mother who gave him her son's bracelet, said, please make sure that no other mother goes through this. And Obama was trying to send the message, if I'm president, no other mother of a soldier is ever going to feel it. So Obama said he would lose a war to prevent somebody hurting. So he actually said it three times. Obama also said this in the debate on Friday night.
We, as one of the biggest consumers of oil, 25% of the world's oil, have to have an energy strategy, not just to deal with Russia, but to deal with many of the rogue states we've talked about, Iran, Venezuela. And that means, yes, increasing domestic production and offshore drilling.
When I heard him say that, I said, now, wait a minute, he's never said that. Obama, the Democrats have never come out in favor of drilling. Obama was mocking drilling. Obama was saying it wasn't necessary. 10 years we're going to need no more foreign oil. This is what Obama's position was.
We could save all the oil that they're talking about getting off drilling if everybody was just inflating their tires and getting regular tune-ups. You could actually save just as much.
That's July 30th of this year. Have you forgotten this? This is how simplistic and simple-minded Obama is. He was never, ever in support of drilling. And at the debate Friday, well, we must drill. Of course, domestic drilling, we must do that, blah, 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 blah. He wanted to pass around tire gauges. He was trying to oppose drilling by saying that inflated tires and tune-ups could save as much oil as we would get from drilling. It doesn't sound to me like he was in favor of drilling. He was opposed to it. And the tire gauge was our weapon against drilling. Then there was this from the Messiah.
Part of what we need to do, what the next president has to do, and this is part of our judgment, this is part of how we are going to keep America safe, is to send a message to the world that we are going to invest in issues like education.
Now, here he goes again with this, there's things wrong with our country, and we're going to show the world this and show the world that invest in education. Education is as big a mess as the subprime mortgage mess is. Well, it's pretty close. What we're getting for the money we're spending on education is embarrassingly little. And we got to show the world we're willing to spend money on education. Hey, Obama, we spend more on everything in this country than anybody else in the world spends, including your beloved Chi-Coms. We spend more on education, we get less for it. But what does this show the world? Business. Once again, the theme is our country is not what it used to be. Our country is going downhill. And then, it went on and on in this similar vein. I'm telling you, in the debate that I saw, the second 45, last 45 minutes, Obama had the floor wiped. And here we go again, because we had all these people, these commentators, with the standard template for measuring who won and who lost. Well, Obama went in as the underdog, because this was foreign policy, and that's McCain's strong suit. But hey, Obama did really well. He ended up in a tie. And so since he exceeded expectations, he actually won. And of course, our wizards of smart on our side of the aisle in the media, many of them agreed with that. And there's a polling data is out now, and all the polls are saying, yes, Obama cleaned up in the debate. Not the debate I saw. I don't think people watch the debates the way the drive-bys analyze these things. The only thing I could say is the first 25 or 30 minutes when it was on the economy, which is what people remember, it could have been better. I mean, I could have, two references to earmarks was enough, but 20 minutes worth of earmarks and government's over pork barrel spending and all that, it was a tough first 25 minutes. I'll admit that. Okay, we're back. Pardon the delay here, ladies and gentlemen. I've got to check the transcripts of the first half hour of this program today. There's a story that's just been posted by Politico and also at CBS News on their website. And the headline to this story is House GOP mocked by Rush. Now, as far as I remember, I said God bless the House Republicans today. House GOP mocked by Rush. For those of you in the House GOP, those of you on the Hill listening, those of you who know people on the Hill, you've got to get, I did not mock the House GOP today. I got on conservative media for mocking the House GOP. Here's what this story says. Rush Limbaugh opened his show today by piling on top of House Republican leadership for claiming that a crucial number of their members voted against the bailout package because of a partisan speech that Pelosi gave. They quote me as saying, come on, guys, can you grow up? There were a whole lot of reasons for House Republicans to vote against this thing yesterday. I'm having Coco up the website check the transcript. What I said today was that I was upset that conservative media was jumping all over Republicans. I was praising the House Republicans for their vote, and I pointed out that the real reason that the real reason that they voted against, they saw what the Democrats were doing. They saw all kinds of Democrats voting no on this. Whatever the case, I am not the one mocking the House GOP. There are others, like at National Review Online on their corner blog, Republicans in the House are being mocked, but not by me. I'm the one standing up for them. Others on our side of the aisle are saying, well, you know, both sides are to blame. No, both sides are not to blame. It's the Democrats who are to blame. I haven't blamed the Republicans for anything here. This headline is designed to dispirit the House Republicans and to make them think everybody on the right is aligned against them, and it's not the case. There may be people on our side aligned against the House Republicans for short-sighted and illiterate reasons, but I am telling you uninformed reasons, but I am not one of them. I praise them. As soon as I get this transcript, I'm going to find out how in the world this misunderstanding happened here. I've said a lot of words here. It's hard to remember them all specifically. That's why we're checking the transcript. In the meantime, we go back to the phones. And Deborah in Marietta, Georgia, I'm glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just so furious. Not at you, Rush. Nobody can be mad at you. But these Wall Street people, they've got my blood boiling. Here they ask you to trust them, to invest your money and stuff. And then they screw up and lose the money for you, and then they're coming back to me and the rest of the people of the United States to ask them to bail their ass out of the fire that they made in the first place.
I understand how you feel.
They should clean up this mess, not me. Not my tax dollars.
Well, but what do you think of the notion that if we don't bail this circumstance out here, there's not going to be any liquidity. People aren't going to be able to make loans, borrow money.
There will be other companies that will start up. There's always somebody right behind them that will take the job.
See, here's the dirty little secret. These people that are telling us that their liquidity is frozen and they can't make loans, they're just not making loans because they know there's a big pile of money waiting to come their way to bail them out.
Well, they don't deserve my money.
And?
Not since they lost my money. And then they're coming back to ask me
for
more?
Well, it's more complicated than that. I understand what you're saying. The point is, this liquidity crisis is also created by government. Because since the government's involved, the market isn't working. The market is holding off. The market has decided, I'm talking about Wall Street, the market has decided, and the credit markets, to not do anything until they find out the size of this bailout and how much of it they're going to get. This is such a golden opportunity to blow the libs out of the water for once and for all. We just don't have anybody willing to do it. Okay, welcome back. Rush Limbaugh. I have looked at the transcript of what I said in the first hour. And ladies and gentlemen, the Politico, the guy that wrote this, Ryan Grimm. I've actually had no trouble with the Politico before. All the people there have written about me have been above board. Jonathan Martin has been excellent. So has Mike Allen. But this is absurd. Here is the transcript of what I said. The Republicans in Congress, I think, went out there and said some things about Pelosi's speech yesterday that a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservatives, said, come on, you guys, can you grow up? Don't tell us you changed your vote on saving the country because Pelosi delivered a partisan speech, unquote, quoting, frankly, people writing at the corner. At National Review Online, conservative media. Then I resume speaking for myself. I frankly think that's what they said, but I don't think that's at all why they changed their vote, if they changed their vote at all. I think that's what they went out there and said. I was defending them. I was not accusing them of being childish. I was not mocking them. I was being critical of our own media for mocking them. When what happened here was that the failure of the thing was planned. The Pelosi wanted it to go down in tubes. Now, I acknowledge that the Republicans went out there and made the speech, or made the comments that Pelosi's partisan speech had an effect on this. But then in the very comment I say here. That's not what they really changed their vote. I defended them. They changed their vote because they saw what the Democrats were doing. They saw Democrats voting against it. So this is, Politico has become media matters here. House GOP mocked by Bush. The segment containing this transcript on the website tonight is going to be headlined, God Bless the House Republicans. I have been the one supporting them totally without wavering against them here during this whole thing. And the Politico comes out and tries to say I mocked them. Now, admittedly, the Politico did not have access to my quotation marks in my uttered, voiced comments. But it's not hard to figure out here. Quote, this is what I said. The Republicans in Congress, I think, went out there, said some things about Pelosi's speech yesterday. That a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservatives said, come on, you guys, can you grow up? It was not I saying that about the Republicans in Congress. So, this is why I suggest anybody that knows these guys. This sounds to me like it is an ongoing effort here to dispirit the Republicans in the House for hanging tough. That's exactly what it is. And to let them think, to have them think, that one of their strongest support avenues has betrayed them. And I assure you, I don't care what the Politico writes, and I don't care how people interpret it, I have not abandoned the conservatives. Do you realize where we'd be if these guys had caved? Do you realize where we'd be if they... I don't care why they didn't cave. I don't care why they say they didn't cave. I know why they didn't cave, and I know why it is that they hung tough. Because they realized this was an election year maneuver by Pelosi that had nothing to do with salvaging the U.S. economy, quote-unquote. They knew that from day one. They also knew that there was nothing different in this bill from its original proposal as brought forth by Henry Paulson over a week ago. All right. Who's next on this program? Logan, Utah. This is John. Great to have you here with us on the EIB Network. Hello.
Hey, Rush Dittos. I appreciate everything that you're saying today, and you're exactly right. Both sides are not to blame for the root cause.
Thank you very much, sir.
And the House Republicans deserve a lot of credit for not caving. I'm really frustrated, though, but it's not with the media or the House Dems, because they're doing exactly what I'd expect. And in fact, I'd even have to say McCain's living up to my low expectations of him. The one Republican that I think deserves my ire is President Bush. And I put a lot of frustration right there at his feet, because it's not that he didn't fail to stand up against this bill and the whole concept. In fact, I've heard that he sent a clear signal to the House Republicans that they need to vote yes. And he's jumped on the Armageddon bandwagon. And it's not just the Democrat. We are truly without a conservative leader, or even what I would think a fair-minded, fiscally conservative leader.
I feel your pain, sir.
So I do not want to step aside and point specifically to the Dems and to the media. Bush, I think, in this particular instance, now, if he's pandering, and it's like the No Child Left Behind Act.
Well, this is why a lot of Republicans are confused, because they see but you've got to reserve for the president the same right you reserve for McCain and others to be who they are. I mean, he was for letting Ted Kennedy write the education bill. He was for massive amnesty immigration. He's been for a lot of things that we weren't particularly in favor of.
Exactly, but if we then take the step, you've put out there that the Democrats wanted to hang this around the neck of the Republicans. Now, if that's true, and we're cynical about this, either Bush is really ignorant of the politics that's happening on Capitol Hill.
He's not a partisan.
Or he walked right into their trap. And he's playing it. And so I have a really hard time being able to say.
I don't pretend to be able to speak for George W. Bush.
True.
I'm not going to try to explain it. I'll tell you what about the thing that surprises me most about President Bush.
Yeah.
Is that we've talked about it here. We've produced the evidence on our website. This man personally tried to stop the shenanigans going on at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac multiple times this decade. I mean 12 to 20 times there were efforts to re-regulate and to stop this. So it would seem to me that politically the president would have an opportunity to step up and say, I warned everybody, that this was going down. We did our best. The Democrats stopped us at every... But that's not who he is.
Yeah, and so I guess
All of a sudden, what surprises me is he's gone beyond the blame aspect. It's too late to blame people. We've got a problem. We've got to fix it. See, I disagree with that because the reason we need to focus on who's to blame for this is because the same people that broke it now claim to be able to fix it and monitor it and make sure it doesn't happen again. It's senseless to put the people in charge of this who broke it in the first place.
See, but that's the other part of the story in terms of the leadership that we need right now. And I guess we're back to that same point where Bush doesn't articulate well the things that we really need to be hearing. So, yes, I'll buy it that he has his principles. He's acting in harmony with his principles. But, boy, his PR machine needs to do a lot of work.
Well, that's nothing new either. I mean, there's...
No.
I do know for a fact that the president refuses to be partisan. He thinks it dishonors the office. He'll do it on the campaign trail now and then, but he will not do it while conducting official Oval Office business. To a lot of people's dismay and frustration. There's another factor that you throw in here, and that is that, what's he got here? It's October, November, December. There are 3.5 months left, and basically 3 months left in his administration. I don't think he thinks there's enough time to fight. I don't know. I'm going to stop there. 3 months left. You put the connect the dots. It is what it is. And at this stage, the conservative leadership you're looking for is in the House of Representatives. And they stood up and they bucked their own president. You know, here's another thing. I mean, it's just an interesting observation. The very Democrats who have made it plain they despise George W. Bush. They hate his guts. And they have for 8 years. They have done everything they can to tar, feather, ruin, destroy his character, his life, his presidency. And yet here they are on the same page with him on this. Acting like all of a sudden he's their best friend. I hope these guys are learning something. I'm talking about the Democrats, and the president too. About it was stated earlier on this program, and it's true. The two presidential candidates, the one thing that they don't get here is the degree of opposition to this among the population. By the way, Obama, July 20, changing subject here, but from Bush, July 29, 2008, Barack Obama. Before the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. And we've got this in our archives. I just didn't want to pressure Cookie to find it now because I just was reminded of this. But we can do it tomorrow. 2:45 in, 2 minutes 45 seconds into his speech. For 8 long years, Washington has not been working for ordinary Americans or for hardworking Latino Americans. Few have been hit harder than Latino Americans and African Americans. You know what I'm talking about? The people like the couple I met in Las Vegas who were tricked into buying a house they couldn't afford and are at risk of facing foreclosure. This was part of his stump speech that you poor people who have these houses you can't pay for were tricked into buying a house you couldn't afford. They weren't tricked into it. This is now all of a sudden. Obama is dropping this, but in April 2008, AFL-CIO, think about it. The top mortgage lenders spend $185 million lobbying Congress, and we wonder why Washington looked the other way when they were tricking families into buying homes they couldn't afford. If anybody did the tricking, Obama, it was you, and it was the Democrats in Washington. Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, you were the ones. Franklin Raines, Jim Johnson, your advisors. Acorn, these were the ones tricking people. Tricking people into buying mortgages they couldn't afford? So you admit that this shouldn't have been done. Is that right, Obama? You're admitting these people should not have gotten mortgages. That's pretty profound because Barney Frank and all the other Democrats think not only should they get their mortgages, they ought to be able to keep their houses and not be foreclosed on. By the way, one more Democrat who said that Iraq is a failure, Nancy Pelosi, February 10th, 2008, on CNN's Late Edition. The purpose of the surge was to create a secure time for the government of Iraq to make the political change to bring reconciliation to Iraq. They have not done that. Iraq is a failure. It is a disaster, she said to Wolf Blitzer. So Obama, you say nobody talking about defeat. Practically all the leaders in your party had us defeated, and they were happy about it. We'll be back. Stay with us. All right, for, let's see, again, the name here. This is Ryan Grimm at the Politico. Ryan, the hour one transcript of the Rush Limbaugh program is now posted at rushlimbaugh.com, so you can go read it and issue your correction. You cannot possibly read the transcript in my first half hour, and write the story that you wrote today and headline it the way it was headlined, House GOP mocked by Rush. In fact, I opened the program, Ryan, thus. I want to dedicate today's Dow Jones Industrial Average, up about 269 at the moment, to the Republicans in the House of Representatives for their boldness yesterday. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you want to try to twist things that came later, take them out of context, say I mocked them, you go ahead. But our transcript's going to be all over the world here in about 10 minutes. And it'll be there for you, Ryan Grimm of the Politico, to issue your correction. Barney Frank. Well, screw, never mind Barney Frank. Let's go to soundbite 8. Last night in West Des Moines, Iowa, here is McCain blaming the Pelosi-Obama ticket for all of this.
Senator Obama and his allies in Congress infused unnecessary partisanship into the process. Now is not the time to fix the blame. It's time to fix the problem. I would hope that all our leaders, all of them, can put aside short-term political goals and do what's in the best interest of the American people.
Senator, you can sit there and you can hope that all day long and it isn't going to happen. It's time to beat them. He said in a statement today, bipartisanship is tough. It's not. It's easy. Bipartisanship is gutless. All you have to do is throw away half your principles and give the other side what they want and then say somehow you're a maverick. Holding firm and fast to your principles is what's tough. Now is not the time to fix the blame. It certainly is, Senator, because the blame rests with the people who claim that they are going to monitor and fix this. Obama. Such a dire emergency, right? Obama yesterday in Westminster, Colorado at a campaign event.
I read the other day that Senator McCain likes to gamble. He likes to roll those dice. And that's okay. I enjoy, I'm making a confession here, I enjoy a little friendly game of poker myself once in a while. But the one thing I know is this. We can't afford to gamble on four more years of the same disastrous economic policies that we've had the last eight.
Let me tell you something, you little squirrel. We can't afford to have 10 more years of the kind of disastrous monitoring of the mortgage and financial markets that your party has given. We can't afford another year of Barney Frank. We can't afford one more year of Chris Dodd. We can't afford one more year of Pelosi. We can't afford one more year of Harry Reid. We can't afford a day of you, Senator Obama. We cannot afford Franklin Reins getting anywhere near a big pile of money anymore. We can't afford Jim Johnson getting anywhere near a big pile of money anymore, Obama. We can't afford Daniel Mudd getting anywhere near a big pile of government money anymore. Bush economic policies have nothing to do with this, Obama. Your policies, your party's policies have brought us to this brink of whatever it is. People were not tricked into loans they couldn't afford. You wanted people to have loans they couldn't afford. That was Acorn's whole deal. I think Barack Obama is a disgrace. Okay, so McCain likes to play craps. He plays at the Bellagio. I went out there playing craps one day, and I got to the tables, and the people at the tables, oh, you just missed Senator McCain. And I went, phew. Is there a lot of everybody that know it? He doesn't hide it. And Obama admits he plays poker. Hell, we're playing poker. By even gambling on the fact that Obama's got a chance to win the election. We don't have time for the next... Yes, we do. Listen to this from McCain this morning on Fox and Friends. Number 10, here we go.
I have talked to the president this morning and recommended an increase from $100,000 to $250,000 FDIC-insured on deposits. I also strongly recommended that the Exchange Stability Fund that the Treasury has available $250 billion to shore up these institutions. Also, the Treasury has at its disposal about $1 trillion that they could begin without congressional authority buying up some of these terrible mortgages.
What?
And help stabilize this situation.
If the Treasury has all this money and can do all this without Congress, then why have we all been wasting our time for 2 weeks on legislation? Sadly, my friends, we are out of busy broadcast moments. Can't do a fourth hour today. We're going to do a fourth hour coming up soon because I owe you a bunch of them, and because I got stuff I can't squeeze into all three lately, but we're swamped everywhere. But we'll see you tomorrow. Adios.